Today on The Cafe, I'm speaking to the Chicks. And if that name doesn't sound immediately familiar, it's because it's slightly different than the one they've used since they got going in the 90s. Natalie Maines, Emily Strayer, and Marty McGuire used to call themselves the Dixie Chicks, changed their name very recently. And first of all, could I get each of you to introduce yourselves, say your own names, so we can hear whose voice is whose?
Sure. Hi, I'm Natalie Maines.
Hi, I'm Marty McGuire.
And this is Emily Strayer.
So we are speaking on July 16th. It's been almost a month since you dropped the Dixie part of your name because of the connotations related to American slavery. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the conversation you had with each other that led to that decision.
So we have had conversations about changing our name probably since 2004, 2003. And it just always seemed like a huge undertaking. Nobody's calling on us to change our name. We just wanted to after the whole Bush controversy, and it just didn't feel like it was representative of us, our name. And then, you know, later on, we definitely tried to use DCX and the Chicks as much as possible and kind of hoped that it would catch on, but it really didn't. So after the murder of George Floyd, there was just no question. It was time, and we were all willing to do it. We didn't even have discussions about whether to do it or not. It was just, you know, how and what will the name be, and start the legal vetting to see if we could be the Chicks. So luckily, we could. You know, there's one other band, New Zealand duo sisters, that are called the Chicks. So they luckily agreed to share the name with us. So that was really nice.
And what has the reaction been like from, you know, fans?
I don't really know.
That's good, kind of.
I think our true fans are so supportive no matter what. I know there was about a 2-week lag time where we were still trying to get our ducks in a row legally and figure out how to do it. And people were really calling us out. There was a Vulture article and they were really calling us out. And on social media, I do know at that point, our fans were like, they don't need to change their name. We know what their politics are. We know where they stand. So I feel like they're probably supportive either way.
Right. Well, I want to dive into the album. Actually, first, I would like to ask, because, you know, the name change happened less than a month ago. The album is just coming out. So that must have been a kind of a logistical issue, changing your name on all of that stuff.
Copies, like 400,000 vinyl copies with Dixie Chicks on them. You know, so it will be a process of unwinding for sure, and those will be collector's items maybe one day. We, you know, our label was very supportive as well, and they were like, you know, we'll make stickers, and that'll be a fun thing for people if they want to put the sticker over it. And so we just tried to make it as easy as possible for fans to embrace the new name.
Well, let's get into the record. First, I want to start with the first song. I want to talk about the title track to the album, the song Gaslighter. And for people who might not know exactly what that means, maybe you could give us a quick definition of what gaslighting is. I don't know who'd like to take that. Natalie, do you want to take that?
Sure. So I learned about gaslighting in therapy. But I think the world is aware of that word now. But yeah, gaslighting is when you just continue to lie and make the other person think that they're crazy and they don't know, you know, the events that happened or whatever it is that the person wants to make you feel crazy about. And so, yeah, that's my understanding, gaslighting.
And so for your first new album in 14 years, why did you choose this song to announce your return?
Well, we debated a few different songs. We knew it was going to be the title of the record because that word is just such a buzzword, and it seemed to kind of encompass the whole album. And we did kick around the idea of Sleep at Night being the first single and not Gaslighter. I wanted Gaslighter out there first because after all this time, 14 years, I just feel like when that chorus hits, it sounds quintessentially us, Chicks.
It does. It feels like a statement right away. And I want to hear it right away. So let's hear Gaslighter right now to get us started. This is the Chicks, Gaslighter on World Cafe.
Gaslighter, denier, doing anything to get your ass farther. Gaslighter, big timer, repeating all of the mistakes of your father.
We moved to California and we followed your dreams. I believed in the promises you made to me. Swore that night till death do us part, but you lied.
That was Gaslighter, the title track from the new album from The Chicks. Today, Natalie, Emily, and Marty of The Chicks are on the World Cafe. That song we just heard, Gaslighter, was the first one you wrote with Jack Antonoff, who produced the album. And if people aren't familiar with Jack Antonoff, he's a member of the band Fun. He's Bleachers. He's produced for Taylor Swift, Lana Del Rey, Lorde. Originally, I understand you thought you were going to work with a bunch of different producers for this album, but you ended up just working with him. Natalie, if you want to start, what was it about Jack Antonoff that felt right?
First of all, he's a great guy. But he also actually really knew our music. I think a lot of people in the industry are fans of us in general, just as a concept, or maybe our politics, but I wouldn't say that they know our music. And he was a real fan and knew our sound and knew our music. And so that was comfortable, but he just has a way of, I don't know, Marty and Emily might be able to help describe just what it is about Jack, but he's funny. He can, and he's just super comfortable and confident.
The personality clicked right away, but also musically, for someone as a producer to be able to just pick up any instrument, play anything, it's such a huge help when you're trying to write something and you want to hear how it's going to sound before we would bring in the band. And then you're kind of under pressure to record the song that day, whereas we were building tracks on this album and we're just piecing it together and he can play everything. So it was just really inspiring.
Yeah. Marty, I mean, how did you feel like he fit into the existing chemistry of the band? You guys have worked together for a long time and you bring in this new person.
Yeah, Natalie had met him a couple times before, but Emily and I had not. And that first lunch we had, I just instantly, you know, when you meet people and you just feel like you've known them for quite a while, or you could be related to them in some weird way.
Yes.
And, you know, we talk a lot about how hard it is to share your own, whether it's baggage or, you know, be vulnerable musically in a group of people is trying to write. And he just makes you feel very comfortable and free to share all this very intimate stuff. And I think that's partly why we stuck with him once we found him, and we wanted to hold on to that and not have to spread ourselves around with a lot of other producers or writers.
I noticed you also brought in Annie Clark, aka St. Vincent. She plays guitar on the track Texas Man. How did you hook up with St. Vincent?
We were hoping just her cool would rub off on us somehow.
Jack produced St. Vincent too, so that he called her and she came over. And she's a great hang, and she helped us with a lot of artistic direction after the album was done. Because, yeah, like Emily said, we were hoping some of her cool would rub off.
She is very, very cool.
She is.
we're going to hear a little bit of Texas Man now. Marty, I love how the fiddle and the electric guitar interact in this song. It sounds very cool. Let's hear a little bit featuring St. Vincent on guitar. This is Texas Man from The Chicks on World Cafe.
Yeah, I can use a Texas man who's not afraid to take his time. Gotta have patient hands, 'cause the way to my heart is through my mind. Been way too long since somebody's body kept me up all night. Yeah, that good kind of keeping me.
So that was a bit of Texas Man from Gaslighter, the new album from The Chicks. I'm Raina Duris. Natalie, Emily, and Marty of The Chicks are my guests today on World Cafe. I do want to talk about another Texas Man. People probably remember back in 2003, America had invaded Iraq. The Chicks faced controversy when they played in London. And Natalie, you said, "We're ashamed the president of the United States is from Texas." It did lead to a bit of an uproar. There was a country radio boycott. People were burning your albums. Toby Keith started beef about it. Natalie, in that moment when you said that at that show, did you have any idea that it could end up being that big of a deal?
Zero. I didn't give it one single thought.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I say, I say kind of off the cuff stuff every show. So it didn't feel like a different night.
And then in this moment, you know, your lives were kind of upended. How did you each deal with that? Maybe Emily, you could start.
Well, we were in London, and then we continued the overseas tour for like 3 weeks after that night. So we were kind of learning bits and pieces through, you know, what was happening in the States through our manager, who was kind of watering it down a little bit, or just kind of dismissing it as, "Oh, this will blow over. He's British." And then, you know, family started calling and telling us what was going on, and they were, you know, bulldozing our CDs and boycotting us and all this stuff. So it was a tense time. I mean, it was definitely tense just because we didn't know what was going on. So those 3 weeks were hard for me. And then, of course, we get home and the label wants to, I don't know, how would you put it, y'all?
Was it the label?
They wanted to handle us.
Yeah, that was Lipton.
Right. We had a sponsor. Lipton tea put us through.
The product Lipton tea.
Right.
Yeah.
They were going to write it. And they
had their crisis management team.
And in the contract, which I don't even know if we can talk about this, it's such water under the bridge, but in the contract, they had to air our commercial X amount of times. And they would run them at like 3 o'clock in the morning so no one could see them.
Well, they also just picked, they were going to run all over the country, but they just picked certain regions that weren't hating us as much and then just bombarded them.
Oh my God.
They would see a Lipton tea commercial like 100 times a day.
You know, it's so interesting, Emily, when you were saying that. I mean, obviously, you know, there was no social media really at that time, the way that there is now. And the idea that you wouldn't immediately see it, that you're getting phone calls and you didn't know the full maybe extent of what was going on.
No, I didn't even have a smartphone back then. I was like, yeah. I don't think I had a BlackBerry by then. Like we were kind of having to rely on people telling us, you know, from family members and things.
Personally, I didn't want to know. I was so happy to not know. Emily wanted to know, like she wanted to like go back and like handle it. And I was like, no, let's just stay here forever. Let's not. Let's never face it. Let's never address it.
Marty, what about you?
Well, I was living in Austin at the time, and I still live in Austin. And I remember just going places and feeling all this angst. I would see maybe somebody at the grocery store come around the corner of my aisle and be kind of walking purposefully towards me. And oh my God, they look like somebody who's going to give me a verbal beating over, you know. I felt like so exposed. And because, you know, Texas is a very conservative state for the most part, not Austin so much, but personally, you asked how we kind of dealt with it personally. I just wanted to kind of go into hiding for a while. I didn't know how I would deal with, when we're together, we feel like this cocoon of protection, I guess. Mm-hmm. And when you're by yourself, you don't know what you would say to somebody if they were to come up and say something mean.
I was sitting at, where was I? I think it was like a Sonic or something like that in this little town that was by the ranch I used to have. And I'm sitting there and this pickup truck's in front of me. And on the pickup truck was a bumper sticker that says, "I'm ashamed Natalie Maines is from Texas." Oh my God, there's bumper stickers now.
That would really make it feel real.
Head down.
My slushy to go.
I mean, when all the original controversy first went down, you were already very popular. You could have, you know, technically stepped away if you wanted to, but you came back despite the hostility from the country world with the 2006 album Taking the Long Way, with the lead single Not Ready to Make Nice. Let's hear a clip of that right now. That's Not Ready to Make Nice from the Chicks' last album, 2006, Taking the Long Way. I'm talking to the Chicks today on World Cafe. The fallout from that moment, it didn't just go away. You guys continued to speak out in the years between. And I read that while you were making this album, the three of you and Jack Antonoff took a break to call up a bunch of restaurants to ask them about Dixie Chicks-themed sandwiches on their menus. Could you tell me how that experiment went?
One of our friends, we can't remember who, sent us a picture one day. They were at a restaurant and they took a picture of the menu and it had a Dixie chicken sandwich. And so Jack wanted to call them and ask them about it because it talked about, it was a controversial sandwich. It described the sandwich. So he called them up and was like, "What's controversial about it? Is this safe to feed to my children?" And the girl was like, yeah. And he goes, "Well, why is it controversial?" She was like, "I'm not really sure. Because they hate men." And I was like, "What?"
Right. Which is very weird because, you know, you guys have never gotten up and said, "I hate men." So why do you think... men. Why do you think
exactly? People- I think she was. I think, and this, she sounded like a teenager. I think "Goodbye Earl." It was probably the only song that she knew of ours, so she thought we hated men.
I mean, I think there is something to that, though, where people think that, you know, outspoken women, they equate that with hating men.
Yeah.
Why do you think there is that attitude towards women who speak out?
Hmm. Who wants to take that?
Yeah, I know, it's a bit of a tough one.
I think you have to ask them. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
A man wrote Earl, and I think a lot of people, we wrote, you know, the lyrics about poisoning a man with black eyed peas. We didn't write that. We just
I mean, women speaking out in country music now is more common than it was when you guys, you know, had that controversy and when you guys were doing that same thing. If Kacey Musgraves talking about gun control, for instance, that comes to mind. When you look at country music now versus in 2003 or 2006, do you see a change in attitude towards people who don't maybe fit that mainstream country mold?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Marty, you do?
I think the genre as a whole is trying to become more inclusive and progressive. And of course there are those that are still making a lot of decisions that are holding it back and wanting it to keep in a certain place. But yeah, artists are, we had heard for a while it was a verb to get Dixie chicked, and people would openly say, like, I feel like I can't say anything. What happened to the Dixie Chicks is going to happen to me. But I do see people feeling like toe by toe, just sticking themselves out there. I think they're realizing that their fan base wants to hear some truth, and especially with everything going on in the world right now, that it feels good to have an opinion.
I don't know that we're as well versed in the industry as much anymore. Once we kind of stepped back, we kind of just do our own thing. We're not really keeping tabs on, you know, that industry, but the New York Times had an article just about that, and they said it's not too little too late. That's not what they were saying, but it's still just not, there are very few people are willing to speak out.
I think I saw that article where it said they were, that country is having a hard time meeting the moment. I mean,
I agree with that. Yeah, I gotta say, I don't share Marty's opinion on this. Yeah. No, I think they are exclusive, and I personally think they like it that way. I mean, I'm not seeing change. I feel like when we were played on the radio, a lot more women were played on the radio. And I know it was a big headline, I think just a year ago, that what, one every
hour
song or something has a female? Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I don't see that they're changing. I'm not looking necessarily because I don't listen to country music or pay attention. Like Emily said, I'm just sort of out of that world. But mm-hmm. from what I hear, I don't hear that it's changing. So
I'm just saying the people within the industry, the artists, are pushing for change. And a lot of label people and a lot of maybe they're not the decision makers, but they're wanting it, because the only way you survive as a genre, as a business, is change. I mean, you mm-hmm. have to. You can't just keep alienating your audience.
But see, I don't think they're alienating their audience. I think that they're catering to their audience.
Small. So many people love country music, but once they, they turn away if they feel like they're not welcome or their views aren't right or not in step with what country music is supposed to be, you know, I mean, they won't gain more audience. They'll just lose it.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, like last year, that Billboard took Lil Nas X off the country charts. It's like, it's a queer Black artist who made a country hit.
Right.
And
it,
you know, and so it's... Yeah,
like themselves in the foot like that. Like, why would you take the most happening thing that's going on right now in your genre and just yank it off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the CMAs, when we performed with Beyonce, you know, they folded under pressure, internet pressure, and removed our performance from their website just for 24 hours. And then they felt the pressure from the other side. But you know, what's anybody standing for? It's like, it's all just, I don't know, to make money, I guess, and think that you're making people happy. I don't know.
Natalie, Emily, and Marty of the Chicks are my guests today on World Cafe. So we've talked a little bit about this stuff, but right now, cancel culture, pretty hot topic. You could argue that the Chicks were one of the first bands to ever actually be canceled, at least by the country world. Having gone through what you went through, how do you see this moment that we're living in right now? How do you see this moment in time?
I think we got lucky. We didn't get canceled. We got banned by country radio. But luckily, we had a really loyal fan base and could still tour and still made our next record. And, you know, I mean, some people are actually canceled, which would have been a completely different reality and story for us if that had happened, to not be able to, you know, make a living doing your job or what you love to do. I can't imagine, you know, how hard that is for people who do actually get canceled. But yeah, it's an interesting time. I mean, I think social media and the internet and all of that, I lean towards, but it's overall good thing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think there's a real difference between people who make a misstep or don't, you know, express themselves perfectly, and then just people just want to take them down. That's different than people who are spewing hate. Yes. And so when I see people who inadvertently step in it, and then everybody just won't give them a break, that bothers me as a person.
It's a little weird too. We're kind of not allowing people to change. Like was it a CEO that stepped down because of something he had written like 14 years ago or something? What was that story? It was in the past couple of days. And I didn't read what it was that he wrote. I think it was something maybe racist, but I just think that that's weird that you would cancel somebody from something 14 years ago. I mean, we don't know who this person is now. Let's judge them based on who they are now. People are allowed to change. We're asking right now for people to change and begging for them to change. So we have to allow that change to happen if we're demanding it. It's a little weird.
I mean, like you said, especially with social media, the world in 2020 is a very, very different place than the world was in 2003. When it comes to artists speaking out for what they believe in, How has your view on that evolved over time?
I mean, I've always felt like we artists should speak their minds. I was listening to a Radiolab podcast a couple weeks ago, and it was all about Nina Simone's music and how outspoken she was. And it was playing an old concert of hers and listening to her talk. And one of her great quotes, I'm probably not going to say it exactly right, but was that as how artists...
Can you be an artist and not reflect the times?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
There you
Emily,
go, Emily.
Emily, could you repeat that for me?
Sorry, how can you be an artist and not reflect the times? So, you know, there's a difference between entertaining. Like when we're on stage, we're not there to hold a political rally or talk about, you know, all the issues at hand. For us, if we get asked, we will be candid. But really, to put it in our music and do it through music, to me, has much more power anyway. Like a song like March, March, you know, it's there's something about when you put it to a melody and a beat and people are liking it for that reason that it becomes more intense somehow or more important than because everyone has a platform these days. Anyone can go on Twitter or, you know, any of the platforms and say what they want to say. But when you're an artist, I think the most effective way is through music.
Well, and I think music and comedy are two ways that actually people might, you know, a different opinion might actually be heard or seep in. Because right. I think usually people only seek out, you know, whether it's what news channel or what news, where they get their news or their friend, you know, whatever. You're looking for people who already think like you. So you're really not open to hearing that other side.
And for people who don't want to, you know, be like, oh, artists just, you know, shut up and sing or whatever. It's just like, well, our voice isn't more important, but because we're artists doesn't mean that we shouldn't be able to say something.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. And yeah, to your point, Natalie, the idea that because people's walls are kind of down emotionally when you're listening to music or enjoying comedy or something like that, it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. the message can maybe get through because your guard's down in a good way. I do want to talk about a protest song that you guys have written that is on this album, March, March. I love it. And I was thinking about how it is interesting because, you know, there's this backstory for you guys that is so politically charged. It's kind of wild that after 14 years, you released your comeback album into a very historic moment during a pandemic, during one of the biggest civil rights uprisings of our time. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And I wanted to sort of close this interview out by asking each of you, what is giving you hope right now before we hear this song? Emily, do you want to start?
Sure. We went to the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. After all the school shootings in a row. We brought our families, our extended families, and it was the first time I'd been in a part of anything that large. And Emma Gonzalez, who was helping to organize that and was kind of the voice to that march, I was really encouraged and hopeful about the next generation that's coming up. They're very civically minded, and I feel like they're the ones that are going to be able to make the next change. And I just think they're doing amazing things. And so that gives me hope.
And that's the Emma that you mentioned in the song, right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Marty, what about you?
Yeah. My hope lies with young people who have so much access to information. They're savvy. They're smart. They're seeing for themselves what's going on, and they know what's right and wrong for the most part. We have 9 children between us, and I think we're all really proud of them and their friends and what they talk about.
For sure. And Natalie, how about you? What's giving you hope right now?
All the changes that are going on right now. I mean, I think they're real. I feel them. I'm really glad that, you know, we were so pumped up after that March for Our Lives. And, you know, I really thought some gun laws and reform was going to happen. But a lot of times I think, you know, the energy that Americans, and I'm sure it happens in every country, feel from something just sort of seems to peter out and go away. Like, we're all mad every time there's a school shooting. and then nothing ever changes or happens. And so I'm really happy to see actual things changing. And yes, this is going to be what, my third time to mention a podcast probably, but I was listening to a different podcast this morning and it was all about the story of Mississippi finally you know, getting rid of its flag. And that was like, I didn't even know the whole history. To hear the Senate pass that, I mean, it was amazing. I just like that this movement isn't going away. The fight for change continues. And I think that that's great.
Well, I think we should listen to the song March March, a song that's pretty perfect for this moment. It's March March from the Chicks on World Cafe.
March March to my own drum. March March to my own drum. Hey, hey, I'm an army of one. Oh, I'm an army of one. March March to my own drum. March March to my own drum. Hey, hey, I'm an army of one. Oh, I'm an army of one. Ren is back in here cause she don't like Mondays. Underpaid teacher, police in the hallways. Print yourself a weapon and take it to the gun range. Oh, you ain't going to the gun range. Standing with Emma and her sons and daughters. Watching our youth have to solve our problems. I follow them, so who's coming with me? Half of you love me, half already hate me. March, march to my own drum.
That was March March. It is from Gaslighter, the new album from the Chicks. Natalie Maines, Emily Strayer, and Marty McGuire have been my guests today. Thank you guys so much. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the new album. It's wonderful.
Thanks.
I'm Rena Durris, back in a moment with more on the World Cafe.
I'm an army